How are you? Did you survive the last lecture? You know, I've introduced Washington staves before, if you remember. In fact, every Congress, you see a few more people. That means a little more activity. That means a little more action is going on. Washington staves have gotten larger because Washington activities have gotten greater. That doesn't mean that these poor people, however, are always going to be in Washington. As you know, we are trying to find a U.S. center. We'll be kicking things together adequate to the discovery of a center. A Washington center is not the most desirable center in the world for the good reason that it can't be totally, it can't totally hold all the people who come into it. We're running out of buildings. We're into three buildings now. And organizations, when they start getting into more than two, start to get a bit decentralized and dispersed and so forth. The proper way to handle this sort of thing is just get a great big building someplace or a very large quarters, very large area of activity, so pre-clears and students coming in will have some place to live, some place to be, something to be cared for. Now, we're actually on the lookout right now to find some centralized center for the United States. Not because we have to leave Washington, but it's certainly because we're outgrowing this town. If we start on down the block and eventually wind up with several blocks of things and so forth, we won't have wound up with anything. And there's not much point in doing that. It doesn't mean, however, the Washington organization as such will cease to exist. It will continue to exist because there's considerable local traffic and so forth, and an organization will continue to exist here. HCO Continental, however, and many of the activities which are now carried on in Washington will be centralized someplace in the United States. We haven't picked out that spot, and I would greatly welcome your suggestions with regard to where a proper total U.S. Center for Scientology should be. That was a very fast response. Matter of fact, I was thinking that way myself. You just put it on the dispatch line and tell me why. I will be very happy. We're looking now at a steadily rising curve of traffic, and that curve is getting just a little bit steeper. In other words, the curve, if a curve were just going up as a straight line and so forth, you could predict it very nicely. The curve isn't doing that. It's going, looks more like a roller coaster. And some of these points, it's liable to take off vertically. And when it takes off vertically, I don't want an organization in an area where it can't expand. You get the idea. I mean, when you've got a crush on, you want to be able to get your director of material on the phone to bring in 15 more Quonset huts. You want some place to set it up. You got the idea. I mean, when you have to act fast in this sort of thing, you have to act fast. You can't let any grass grow under your feet. You run out of service quarters, you run out of service, everybody's had it. The whole thing goes into total confusion, and any possible forward gain you have made is lost as a resultant confusion. I know, 1950. Now, I wouldn't personally mind 1950 happening again. As a matter of fact, if I mocked it up, I know several people I'd shoot. But I don't see any reason the public should be subjected to the amount of confusion and invalidation and all the rest of it that occurs when a central service area is incapable of handling all of its traffic. Now, that's something for you to remember if you set up an HAS co-audit course and it starts to climb for the moon. Continue to give service and cope somehow with quarters. But don't fail to cope with quarters and never discontinue service. Never discontinue service. Never put up a big stop and say, well, we can't accept any more on the course. You'll just have to have a waiting list. Because you'll break the back at once of your forward pressure. Now, most of you, fortunately, live in an area or are in an area that has outskirts. Washington has no outskirts. It sounds weird, but it doesn't. You go north, south, east, or west, you run into, not outskirts, you run into, I'll have to use it. I don't like profanity on the stage, but I'll have to use it. You run into the government. They've got land spotted in all directions. Another thing is in a time of a national emergency, that sort of thing, they close all the roads in the vicinity of very large towns, that sort of thing. So you want to start looking toward the outskirts. But believe me, you have to have considerable public demand and considerable traffic before you go into outskirts. We'll have to have considerable more traffic before we move FCDC. Because the traffic itself has to be adequate to warrant the construction of quarters that are worth building. There's no sense in going out someplace and just putting up a little shack and dealing with four or five people. If you are pressured into that kind of a move, make sure you're dealing with a few thousand. You got the idea? Now, wherever future planning is going, it's simply going on the supposition, the assumption, that we will continue to gain as we have gained, and that the curve which has already been plotted will continue to plot that way. And that is a very reasonable prediction. And if that curve continues as it is going right this minute, then it means it will start accelerating somewhere along the line, and we'll get one of these square of the distance things where you're going by geometric progression, because the thing has a tendency right now to do a geometric progression, something on the order of we double income every year. Now, this can get rough. If you started doubling income every 6 months, you could then predict that you would double income every month and a half, eventually, you see. And when that kind of thing's going, the traffic is such that you would start giving very bad service, and that you must never do, and that we must never do. No matter how much service we give, we've got to give good service. And that's going to take a lot more auditors than we got, but it's also going to call for the services and pressurized services of an awful lot of old-timers who are sitting now calmly, serenely, some of them, unfortunately, drifting, just drifting along comfortably, so forth. That loud baying sound you will someday hear behind you will have to do with the fact that we have just run out of time and bodies. And you, too, will have to be in there pitching. Anytime you start a forward motion in a society, you generally measure your term advance by the degree of criticism. Oddly enough, that's the safe way to do it. If nobody's criticizing you anyplace, one of two things is true. Either you and your service activities are perfect, or you are not getting anywhere at all. That's something to remember when you say, why are they so upset? Oh, man, if they don't get upset, I've had it. Get the idea? And listen. Praise from a psychologist is something I can't use. I haven't any storage space for it anyplace. As you start to go forward, you will find two things happening. More and more material of ours is borrowed, such as there's a big article in Harper's just brought up, all about they're now beginning to believe that the mind is not necessarily part of the body. This goes hand in glove with they discover prenatals, but not how to run them. They discover that next year. Here's, you find that phenomenon continuing forward. The material is borrowed. Now, there's no reason to get upset because the material is borrowed. That is your advance line. Those are the little feelers that are going out there in front of identity. The thought is traveling before its speaker. Is that the idea? And if those aren't going into the society, start worrying. Now, some scientist up in Boston or something, they do some weird things, by the way. They don't cut me off the line, totally. I all of a sudden will get a cable or a telegram or a letter or something like that asking me for an opinion on something or other from some unexpected quarter. And I'll give them an opinion very rapidly, and I'll send them back the telegram, well knowing what's going to happen. Somebody gets up at a scientific congress and says, "It has been discovered by Professor Umpchuck of Greenland that the human body can be increased in mass by mental activity, shedding new light on the possible source of matter." What I just told you really happened. Really happened. The telegrams and things that came in got the data. I gave them the data. Name was signed right at the bottom of the telegram thing. It was brought up in the Scientific Congress. All the data was given, but all the wrong names, and it appeared in Chicago papers. I don't know how long ago that was, about 18 months ago, 14 months ago, something like that. It was very amusing that you get this sort of thing. That's simply a symptom of can't confront. They are so aware of the tremendous mystery of everything we're evolving that when they look in our direction, they can't see us. And they've got to assign it over here someplace that they know exists. We're sort of the organization that's 3 feet back of society's head. Well, there's no reason to protest the fact. There's no reason at all to protest it. Just accept it and live with it. Because these feelers will go out in advance of knownness for quite a while, and it'll go out that way forever. 20 years from now, why, you'll hear some witch doctor is pounding the anvil or altar or something of the sort, and he'll be telling somebody all about a whole bunch of stuff out of 8008. You know, it's brand new stuff. It'll take him a year or two, and finally he'll look at what he got it out of, and he'll say, "That's 8008. And he finally say, "Well, it was 8008. You get the information. The philosophic character of the information goes on ahead of the identity of the information. Or actually its purpose. Just pure information is what they normally get into. Now, this is all important to us because right along with it, there's a rippling wave. As this goes out, there's a back wave that comes in, and it's very critical. The first vision of the mystery is to be critical of it. Yak, 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 what else can I borrow? Yak, 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 what else can I borrow? Yak, 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 yak. Well, that's an inevitable advance. Inevitable. Einstein, for instance, not comparing anybody with anybody. Einstein's theory of relativity for 3 years was known as the greatest hoax in the world of mathematics, and was condemned violently from the rostrum of the great International Scientific Congress, which was held in Berlin in 1929. A great deal of that particular conference was devoted to branding and condemning people who would perpetrate mathematical hoaxes. 3 years later, 12 men in the world stood forward and said, "We are the only ones in the world able to understand the Einstein theory." 10 years after that, everybody went nuts and built an A-bomb. The funny part of it was, is Einstein told them to. You probably were misled by all of the tremendous amount of propaganda. Information is really never misused. Information is really always used in the direction it was intended to be eventually, because the postulate of its use is carried along in the structure of its issuance. And Einstein, long before World War II, wrote the President of the United States. And he said,
"We got a little gadget here that can bomb cities and kill men, women, and children. Why don't you buy it, FDR?"
Although years later he said he never did this, somebody dug up the letter out of the White House files one day and was published right here in the Washington Post on the front page. He said, "Build an A-bomb with the Einstein theory, if you please." So he was right in there pitching. Now, if we say consistently that this is what you do with this information, believe me, that's what they'll do it. Well, man's been trying to go the other way for a long time, but right now, let me let you in on something. He's had it. He won't get out of this one. Next thing you know, he'll have a civilization here in spite of him. I want to talk to you about some of these processes that you've just been using in the seminars. May I do that?
Yeah.
Well, in the last lecture, I talked to you about survive and succumb. Nick Dwyer, survive and succumb. And basically, we said it's because the fellow didn't want to talk to over there and didn't know who was over there and so forth that made him get into a state where over there was a mystery. The individual became the effect of a mystery by refusing to communicate with that mystery. And he dug up an idea that everybody was a mystery and every over there or every that guy was a mystery. He got that way one or the other. But somewhere along the line, he consented not to let his postulate stick. Now, where exactly was that point? Because at some point, he must have said, "My postulates can't stick." Somewhere, he must have said that, right? Why? What's the exact mechanism? Because if his postulates continued to stick and all was stuck and every postulate he made was absolutely correct and everything he said became so or didn't become so as he wished them to, then, of course, he never could have gotten himself in trouble. But somewhere along the line, not just to make a game, he said, "My postulates can be mishmashed. Something can happen to my postulates." Well, an inspection of that exact mechanism gives us two things. First and foremost, it gives us a fall short of communication. And below the level of native state, below the level of deciding not to know anything about anything so one could know something. See, in native state, one knows everything. Then he has to know something about something. Well, in between there, he has to decide he doesn't know about anything. Up in that level, that's all right, but let's get down to communication and space, and we find his communication activity with another being through and across space was his first action which might have been susceptible to future mishmash and aberration. Hence, communication is the top single aberrative button that you can push and push and push, and it'll run out the whole track. Because all things depend on communication. Communication is the common denominator to all reality. Communication must exist, whatever else exists, or one would never know that anything else existed. Communication, in its largest sense, then, means an action or method of transmitting or receiving knowledge or ideas. Therefore, if you look at the wall and find out a wall is there, you have communicated, right? And it's by a return communication to discover it was there, correct? All right. Communication must have been present in both sanity and insanity. Must have been present. But here's the trick. Communication is present in sanity,
but is not absent, but is restrained in insanity. See, it's incomplete. Complete communication never got anybody in trouble, but incomplete communication has. Therefore, the first and second stage of communication could be said to be complete communication, incomplete communication. Now, complete communication and the ability to completely communicate, we believe, preceded the incomplete communication. Now, that is supposition, but it is pretty well proved out by the workability of what we're now calling communication processes. The first and foremost of these communication processes was contained in a process called ARC straight wire. And the genesis of that process is clear back in the middle of 1950. ARC straight wire. In its most elaborate form, you find it on the back page of Self-Analysis, the book. And that contains communication. And oddly enough, the workability of the whole series depends on the one question in the series. Recall a time you communicated to someone. That's the workable process. All of the other processes are interesting, but they don't get a case anyplace. There are in all, I think, six questions that are asked. And only one of those six questions actually has any tremendous value in terms of gain. And that is, recall a time you communicated to somebody. That was the one. There are several reasons for this. Because nobody else was ever able really to get you into trouble. You had to get yourself into trouble. Because of this, then the communication factor involved in this was from cause to effect. You have to process a pre-clear at cause point. And it was at cause point that you have to hit, or it's at cause point that you have to hit with all processes. You can't hit at effect point. If you continue to hit at effect point, you're running again a second postulate. So we have complete communication as earlier and more powerful than incomplete communication. And we have cause as earlier and prior than effect. If you can get the idea, this is an erroneous idea, but if you get the idea that Thetan sails into the universe, he has to communicate before he's communicated to. He has to make himself visible, which is a communication generation, you see. He has to say he's there, one way or the other, by either bringing in a body or throwing out some sparks or doing something. He has to say he's there before anybody can communicate back to him. So therefore, all communication is priorly cause. Causative communication. And we get complete causative communication as being the button which then undoes all incomplete communications, all effects, and everything else right on up the line. Because communication is the common denominator to everything else all up the line, you can use it to run out practically anything and everything anyplace. An individual's decision to succumb came about on the day when he decided to register an observation of somebody else's postulate that the other person had been injured by his communication. He had to decide his own communication had been bad or had been improper and that it had caused something to happen at the other end he didn't want to have happen. He let himself be convinced one way or the other that his communication should not have occurred, that the receipt point of the communication did not deserve it and should not have had it. Now, this becomes the single trick, the single aberrative trick, which is prior to all other aberrative tricks, and on which all other aberrative tricks played by anybody depends. When an individual is communicating at you or shooting at you or any other transmission towards you, which we call communication, too heavily, the thing to do, of course, is to say, "You are wounding me," if you want him to stop. Well, it's quite interesting because early on the track, he couldn't have wounded you unless you had decided to give him the 1-2. Now, you decided to give him the 1-2 and tell him that you were wounded, therefore he must stop. Got the idea? That put a break on his communications, and when it was done to you, that put a break on your communication. But full communication preceded the fact that somebody asked you not to communicate for some reason or another. All sorts of trickery goes along with this. There are tremendous pieces of trickery, such as that ball of fire you just threw over here when the fellow threw over a small donut. See? Ball of fire? I didn't throw a ball of fire. Yes, you did. There it is. And the recipient mocks up a ball of fire and shows it to him. There's the ball of fire you threw over here. This brings about what? This is the first genus of uncertainty. It brings about an uncertainty. Well, I said I'd throw over a donut, and did I throw over a ball of fire? Did I throw over a donut? What did I throw across it? What did I put on my comm line over to there? Well, mixing a guy up as to what was on the comm line is one of the oldest and nuttiest tricks. All wives use it, all husbands use it. Still goes on down the line. It's so hackneyed, it almost passes observation. The motto of it is, "No, dear, you said..." Now, there's communication at work. And the individual, with this and other tricks, developed the idea and actually postulated himself the idea that something was interfering with his postulates. And then he proved it to himself, or he had it proved to him one way or the other, that he didn't make straight postulates always and therefore had to be careful and limit his power because his postulates were not always accurate. And that piece of mislogic and incorrectness sits back of every aberration there is. They're all based on this thing that my postulates, I'd better not be too careless with them because they're not always what I meant them to be. People express this in speech, and they even say wrong things so they can then correct them. They get their speech mixed up one way or the other. This is the same thing, but speech, verbal expression, is a simple matter here. Expressing postulates. Of course, a postulate is expressed in many ways, not just speech. You can make a gesture and somebody else is then to understand something. And nobody had to speak back in the days of Rome when they were being asked a question from the arena floor. They just look up and people would say, "No speech necessary." Observation necessary, though, and a communication occurs merely on an observation. The form the transmission takes is unimportant. It's that the idea or the knowledge is interchanged. Now, this idea, then, that he didn't always know what he was doing, didn't always know what he was saying, made him postulate that he could go zigzag when he meant to go straight. Now, that's a fascinating thing, but that's all there is. That's all the machinery there is underneath aberration. Is, well, it's all very well for you to say that I just have to make up my mind to be well and I'll be well. I know different. I'll show you. Now, I'll make up my mind to be well. Oh! See, I showed you, see? I get it every time. As a matter of fact, you get the 1-2. The first postulate instantly collides with the second postulate. It's just set up that way. Any full positive postulate an individual begins to believe will result in something bad happening. And he finally says the safest thing in the world to do is not postulate anything. And he begins to say, Well, I really don't mean it, but. I don't mean to talk too loudly, but it seems to me, possibly, that, if somebody else looked out the window, don't take my word for it, but perhaps if scientific instruments were used, you could, or some technician who is an authority on the subject, could detect that... precipitation's occurring. That's what's known as scientific writing. Fear of making a statement or a postulate. And that fear is inculcated by the belief that it'll be wrong. But the first and second postulate are such that if one said, it's raining, well, that's right next door to saying, I've got a hand and it's raining. And if one were that boom about the whole thing, the next thing we'd see would be, well, I don't know, that trouble you got into with the rain gods back about 485 million years ago, that might all come up again. So we'd better not just say it's raining, because it might be discovered that one had a hand in raining this. Therefore, science with its detached ideas and attitude, non-participant. Einstein's essays on be an observer, bud, and be safe. You ever read his essays on being an observer? An observer has no business to do anything but observe the meter. He must stand immediately and exactly in front of the meter and observe the meter, and he must read exactly what he sees and put no further interpretations on the line whatsoever. He must only read the meter. And if he's sufficiently irresponsible, we'll have some irresponsible readings. And if we get irresponsible enough, we can build an A-bomb, kill all the men, women, children, Hiroshima, and there we go. And nobody will trace it back and say, Einstein did it except Hubbard, and he's a bastard. Hence, very little direct postulating occurs in this day and age. Very little. As a matter of fact, it's looked on as not quite nice. When you go into a case, then, whatever significance has attached itself to communication, whatever sequences have occurred that tend to demonstrate and prove these points, it nevertheless is true that all these points are based upon unwillingness to communicate when they are aberrative. So restraint of communication means straight restraint of self, denial of self, reversal of one's own ideas, abdication of any point, abnegation of any idea. Draw back, don't live, don't participate, don't be part of it. Get out of here. Now that's the immediate result. And the way to cure it is to just keep hitting at the subject of communication and plowing through the unwillingnesses to communicate and running the old grooves of having communicated until the individual at last is in contact with enough things in his past and his present that he feels safe and secure about communicating with, that he not only will communicate, but he'll also occasionally, at first, very quick and gingerly, make a postulate. Now there's aberration. That's what it comes down to. It isn't any more complicated than that. But the second you tell somebody that, he said, for an instant, he says, boy, I've really got it. I've got it made. You know, I've got... But it was, of course, my communication with Agnes that drew me in the sump, and therefore, Agnes, wouldn't it be women? Women got me all upset, or probably I'm in a male body, and actually, I'm probably more mixed up with not men than I am women, even though I kind of Agnes was probably men, that's it, must be men. Now I'll worry about men. Oh, no, it couldn't possibly be men. The only time I ever really get upset or mad is when dogs come around. It must be dogs. Well, it couldn't be dogs, it must be dog hair. No, it couldn't be dog hair. It couldn't possibly be communication. Maybe it's mass that I'm upset about. Maybe if I just get rid of all the mass I've got every place, maybe I'll be all right. No, it isn't the mass. Maybe if I pull in all the mass I've got every place, maybe that'll be okay. No, that isn't all right. Boy, he's off down the track in a mishmash and a mix-up that particularly a psychiatrist would never be able to figure out. Now, therefore, the individual who is processed directly on communication and who can be supervised sufficiently to make him do the process may or may not be taking the fastest route for his level of case that can be taken. See, this may or may not be true, but he is certainly taking a route that sooner or later, in glee, joy, agony, or complete misery, will get him along the line of untangling the whole reactive bank. See, this is something that will go all the way through and finally wind up with the individual clear. Clear could be defined as clear of any inhibition about being able to communicate. That's what it would be. But an individual who can totally and fully communicate also understands then, doesn't he? So if he also understands, then he isn't doing odd little tricks that have to do with punishment, do with showing a person that he shouldn't be the way he is, and so on, and just accidentally wringing his neck now and then. Those things are all born out of distrust and uncertainty. It took a long time for cruelty to get born on the track. Long, long time. Cruelty was the protest about not being able to communicate with, and to this day is still that. When a state says, hang them, draw them, quarter them, arrest them, particularly innocent citizens, do something, punish, 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 they have simply admitted they can never find out what's going wrong. They just admitted they don't know anything about crime, and they're just taking a last-ditch expedient. Well, we've got to do something with the government, so kill some people. That's the best we can do, you know. Some general stands up and says, manufacture weapons, manufacture bombs, manufacture bombers, manufacture guided missiles, and by all means train a bunch of young men to shoot guns. Oh, what's this guy? He's just a roving idiot. He's not talking about anything but the most debased, far-down level of communication there is. He's simply saying, I have no faith or confidence of any kind whatsoever being able to communicate with anybody, so we might as well be ready to shoot them because I know it'll all wind up bad in the end. And his postulate, they'll all wind up bad in the end, sticks. And it does. See how it goes. These are already failures to communicate. People who go around all the time saying, well, I won't be able to convince him, I won't be able to make the grade anyway, so why as well, why try, I'll just do something desperate and sudden, and so forth. Well, these people, they don't understand very much. Now, there is such a thing as making an impingement. Thetans used to do that. You can make an impingement. You can say, boom, one way or the other. You say, you better communicate with me or something horrible will happen. Yes, you could say things like that, but that's still on the road down. Full and complete and entire communication is so awe-inspiring that if you get most people to think of, just get the thought of communicating freely and utterly without any restraint in all directions, no barriers, just total communication in all directions to everything. Can you get the idea? All right. That's all very well, and sometimes you can hold it for hours. And sometimes you can hold it from there on out. But there are people who, after they've held it a moment or so, say, oh! Because they walked into the basic postulate back of the bank. They once believed this. And when they believed it, something came along and convinced them that they mustn't do that. And they run into the thing that they mustn't do that about. And so they get a shake-up. And that's psychosomatic illness of one kind or another. Communication. Communication is a two-edged sword. If one starts communicating, one must then, by postulate and without other reasons, cease to communicate. He mustn't cease to communicate because something forbade him from communicating. You get the subtle difference here. An individual can communicate and cease to communicate by his own postulate. But actually, he can't really afford to communicate, and then because somebody threatens him, or because something or other happens, one kind or another, under duress, cease to communicate. Because he's admitted what? He's admitted that he can be hurt. He's admitted that he can be punished. And he's made the postulates of self-destruction. Now, these postulates of self-destruction are a game all by themselves. And thetans do a lot of fooling around trying to get somebody else to postulate that they'll die, kick the bucket, and so forth. They even make up social games, say that it isn't nice to say that you're strong. You've got to sort of say you're kind of weak. That's just trying to make somebody else make a postulate that'll help destroy him. This is a game. It goes on all the time. It's socially acceptable not to be this, not to be that. As a matter of fact, there have been societies when it wasn't socially acceptable to be well. You weren't supposed to be well. I mean, it was an affront to everybody to go around saying, I'm a healthy man. Such societies as, there were some 18th century England, for instance, the nobility and the young fops and so forth. Even the men were going around fainting, you know. Very, very funny. They go through cycles of dramatizing this totally. But it's a game. It's trying to say to somebody else, don't communicate, basically. Trying to say to somebody else, there are good reasons why you shouldn't communicate. It's trying to say to somebody, look, I'm just poor, helpless, weak little me, and if you communicated to me, why then I'd fall all apart, and you'd be guilty of killing me, but I've done a lot of good for people, and I've been very sweet to everybody, particularly my mama and my papa, and therefore, if you communicated with me, you'd do something bad to me, and if you did something bad to me, then I'd die, and you'd be guilty. Yes, you would. You'd be guilty. Because I don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. Probably true. Nobody deserves it. But nevertheless, it's a very involved game. It's a game called victim. This is a game called victim. Therefore, when you take a communication process, you're reaching all the way back on the track and sweeping all the way up forward on all the locks on the basic central aberration. Even though it's slow and sometimes agonizing, you'd get all of it sooner or later. I don't know. I suppose there's some cases around that'd be slogging on it for 500 hours. But they'd get there. See, that's someday they'd get there. And some people would get there a lot more rapidly. And some people have to be made to draw it on paper to do the auditing command, because this is a graphable command. And a lot of people have been saying, didn't do the auditing command, but tell the auditor they did do the auditing command. They've been saying, I did it, yeah. Oh, yeah, got it. I did it, yeah, that's right. No, Dianetics and Scientology work providing the PC does the auditing command. And where an individual has not been doing the auditing command, you can always ascertain the fact with this particular communication process. You say, from where could you communicate to A? A bed. From where could you communicate to a bed? Those are all over there. And you say, all right, now, here's a piece of paper. Here's a pencil. Draw a bed. All right. Now, just point out to me on this piece of paper from where you could communicate to that bed. Now, let's just do, you just told me. Now, let's get the picture down so I can see the picture of it here. Where could you communicate? Oh, you say, well, matter of fact, just general, you know, you say, come on now, just that one point, I want you to spot a point here. That's the point I want you to spot on the paper. Where could you get, well, there's no sense in this. This is an insult. This is invalidation. You are telling me that I haven't done the auditing command. You could reply, no, I'm trying to tell me that you have. Now, just put the piece of paper there. There's the bed. Now, you said you could communicate from somewhere to the bed. Now, you show me that spot.
And eventually he'll have to show you some other part of the paper or the bed that he could communicate to the bed from. And he'll have done the auditing command. And that's what a lot of processes which are in Scientology are simply dreamed up to do, to make the individual well enough controlled that he will answer the auditing command. Dynamics and Scientology actually have never failed as such, but certainly they have failed occasionally to make people do auditing commands. Dynamics and Scientology don't fail unless they're not done. Awfully simple, but it's true. If they're not done, they flop. Now, there's a killer. Because maybe the fellow didn't do the auditing command, he's sure going to do it with that piece of paper and a pencil. Now, of course, you shouldn't chop and interfere with somebody continuously when they're trying to do an auditing command. And maybe they're doing an auditing command in generalities and so on that they'll get there with. But it's a good thing sometime when he doesn't seem to be making any progress at all. Good thing to check up with a pencil and paper and say, well, now we're talking about a horse. Here's the horse. Is that where the horse is? All right, that's good. Now, let's take that pencil and show me just where you said you could communicate to that horse from. Just show me that. He'll have to say, there. There, did it? You say, good. And carry on with it. The process is doable then. Now, this is the oddity about this process, that every single physical illness stems from a failure to communicate with that thing that is ill. All illness stems from failure to communicate to the ill area. Hence the success of touch assist. Somebody has a sprained wrist, and you say, feel my thumb, and so forth. You know, feel my thumb, feel my thumb, feel my thumb, or feel my finger, or look at my finger, look at my finger, look at my finger, and you run it out. You're just putting him almost forcefully back into communication with it as fully as possible. When he's fully back in communication with it, he hadn't got a sprained wrist. That's it. Now, a person withdrawing from life and saying, I don't want to live, and I'm going to go get another mock-up someplace, is saying at the same time, I'm falling out of communication with things, and he does, so he gets sick. It's reversely true. If you put him back in communication with things, he will find out two things, that he doesn't have to escape, and that he can if he wants to. It's a cruelty to let somebody halfway out a door. The best way to get the whole thing out is to bring them back and show them what they were running from, let them inspect this completely and totally, and then put them back near the door again and say, you can go if you like. The fellow says, well, I was just being silly. You say, that's all right, good. Or he leaves. Good. But at least we owe him a chance to find out why he was scared pink. Or why he was upset or disgusted. Because he's got to face it someplace. And if we've got him right here, right now, we won't have to catch him up the track in a couple of thousand years, will we? Huh? Well, that's the way it is. All right. So a communication to a body part will cure illness very easily. The way you do it is simply say to the fellow, well, you don't seem to be looking so well. Are you sick or well? And he said, well, I'm not feeling so good. You say, well, what body part would you say is ill? And he says, the medulla oblongata. It's just hurting like mad, medulla oblongata. That's your auditing command. Don't try to change it around. That's what he thinks is sick. Now, you're not trying to get him to be correct in his anatomy of the human body. You're merely trying to get him well. And his ideas of anatomy may be totally cockeyed, but he will always name what he thinks is sick. And therefore, he has always named the thing he isn't in communication with. Oddly enough, you'll know enough about it. But you could find other things about him that were also sick, but you certainly could cure an acute illness just by fellows going ka-choo and wheezing and running a temperature. And so when you say, what do you think is sick? He says, my elbow. Well, that's what's sick. That's what's sick. And the auditing command is, from where could you communicate to an elbow. Generalized case, not that elbow, but an elbow. Because it's not always this elbow that he's trying to avoid. He may be trying to avoid somebody else's elbow in this same life, or he might be trying to avoid an elbow that he sprained fighting the Amazons. Now, wherever we look in illness, then we have a communication restraint. Not a communication failure, but a communication restraint. We have an individual who is not completely communicating, and he has reasons why he isn't, and all of that sort of thing, and the reasons why all blow up if you simply get to communicate to an area. We've known this for some time, but we hadn't known it was quite this deadly and sweeping to run a straight communication process with a pre-clear at cause, every command, and never at effect, you see, and get him to run the exact parts or things, that very clever assessment on our part. Acute illness is the only one that you do with this body part, and he names the body part and so on. He'll get well. But to resolve the whole case very often requires very slippy and very careful assessment, because on the whole track, the thing he would never communicate with, he can't even tell you what it is. And only you, the auditor, by use of an e-meter, can find an area that is that abandoned that he can't even mention it. And if you can find that area and then run a communication process exactly on that object or thing or being, you'd run him very far up the road to clear. You might have to do this assessment several times. There might be several things that you'd have to locate. You'd have to be very clever in your assessment, but you would get a theta clear. And there is a one-shot clearing process. As a matter of fact, covering certain universes and dynamics thereafter, that process goes all the way on up to OT, which was what it was designed for, and I've just downgraded the thing so you could have it to get to clear. Not because I'm tired of seeing you around, because I want you to have a little more fun. Thank you. Thank you.